Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
All right, folks, good evening, and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon. I am your hostess and cruise director, Madam Perry, and I also known as Jennifer Perry. So glad to have you here. And as I've been telling you lately, every time we get started, the show just gets to be more and more fun for me because of you, because of all of you folks that listen and share this and leave me comments and messages about the guest or call the guest or interact with them. That just makes it better and better, and I think that's what helps me get more interesting guests every week. Recently, let's see, we had, last night we had Reno Soriano, and if you've listened before, if you listened for a while, you know Reno Soriano. He's our holistic health alchemist. And the last time he was here, not last time, but the time before, he was talking about how to detox your life story. And then he was taking us several steps further last night with that. So don't forget to check out that. He even gave away the books, The Illumination Codes, and some others recently. So yeah, and definitely go to his website and follow him. We also had Shelley Blum, the Water Ski Girl Wonder. Michael Fleeman, because you know I love true crime, because truth is stranger than fiction and what people really come up with. Michael Fleeman was on. Rudy Sarzo, who we love, animal activist and bass player for Quiet Riot. And Ozzy. And we had Chasm Sultan from Todd Rundgren, Utopia, Joan Jett. And also Blue Oyster Cult. I think he and Rudy swap out bass duties on tour with them. And coming up, we've got more good things, too. Tomorrow night, we've got this rocker out of Texas, Julian Acosta, a young cat. He's really, really making strides, big following, and so I'm lucky to get him. Also coming soon will be Vincent Levy Bryant. He's a musician from New York, and he's doing his first feature film. Can't wait to have him on. And, of course, you know, we also recently had Greg Dybeck, who's the managing editor of Elite Daily. And we talked about his book, The Art of Living Other People's Lives. And also coming up soon, I don't know when, but coming soon will also be the Twang Bar King, Adrian Belew. But tonight, swingers, this is so cool. I have wanted to have this person in for a long time. He's a best-selling author, winner of the Anthony Award, the Benjamin Franklin Silver Award, the San Diego Book Award. He's just come here to Madam Perry's Salon straight from California. So let me go ahead and say, please, come into Madam Perry's Salon, Matt Coyle.
Thanks for having me. I'm not sure where to sit. I see JR's hat. I don't want to sit on that, but I'll find a spot. I guess that's 20 years too early for that one.
Very good, very good.
Thank you.
Oh, where's that rim shot? And the pocket rim shot. And, you know, I read that he, of course, I didn't know he had different dressing rooms. I read that he, during the making of the show, and that was good, he drank a bottle of champagne a day in his dressing room.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good show.
Genie
or Dallas?
Genie.
Wow.
Yeah,
I make you happy on the set, I guess, for a while until you start crying.
Yeah, exactamente, mi amigo. That's exactly it. Until you start crying, then it's all over. But I guess a little bubbly to get you started, and then the genie bottle, and especially working as they were with there on Cocoa Beach and the astronaut stuff and the whole thing. That was a pretty interesting show. So, welcome to Madam Perry's Salon. This is your first time here, and I'm so grateful to have you here. And you have done a lot, but you have got a very popular series with a character, a lead character named Rick Cahill. And so tell us about a little bit about Rick Cahill and how you created this character. Was he like somebody you know? Is he like a lot like you?
I think that, first of all, before I go on, I listened to all your guests and all the guests you've had, and I thought, well, what the hell am I doing here? But especially following the holistic gentleman who could detox your life story, I think I can talk somebody's life story, but I don't know about detoxing. Rick Cahill, as with all first-time authors, I probably started writing Rick 15 years ago, somewhere around there, because it took me about 10 years to get published. With all first-time authors, especially if you're writing in first person, I think the story tends to be very autobiographical. And my life hasn't been that interesting. So I think and I revised quite a bit. I mean, I sent out to agents probably 3 rounds over 5 years before I got my agent, the lovely Kimberly Cameron. So I think with each revision, I think I moved more away from myself and into this fictional character. So luckily, there's a little bit of me in there, but less and less, I think, as I go. Where he came from, like I said, he started with me, and then he evolved into somebody much more interesting.
All right. Well, see, you don't always see your own life as interesting. I think people don't.
No, I think I got to get a look at it.
Yeah. Well, and so from there, now the series, the books are Yesterday's Echo, Night Tremors, and Dark Fissures. And can these books be read? Do they need to be read in sequence, or do they stand alone?
Well, of course I'm going to say they can stand alone, because the last one just came, Dark Fissures just came out in December. But you put a quote up for me about writing a series on the info for the talk.
Uh-huh.
And because it is a series, and I do see it as a long arc. I see it more series wise as opposed to episodic. So yeah, I think arcs do carry over, stories carry over from the books before. So that is always a concern for me, and it was particularly mm-hmm. for Dark Fissures because of something that happened in Night Tremors. But I was happy that an early critic said that you could read it. I think it was the first one of mine he'd read. He said you could read it, you know, as a standalone, Dark Fissures, that is. So, of course, it's always best to start at the beginning, but there's no problem buying that new book right now.
Okay, good, because I'm in Dark Fissures. So I know I'm starting at the end to go backwards, but that's where I'm in right now. And so I don't want this to mess me up. It won't take much. Now, do you tour a lot? Do you go out? Because I see that you've got by the way, you've got a great website. But do you get
Thanks.
Out to tour? I mean, I see you do all the famous bookstores like Vroman's and so forth in California.
Yes, I do tour. And by the way, my website is done by Maddie James from Zuni, XUNI. She's fantastic. I've been planning for becoming a professional writer for a long time, and it took me a long time. But I was looking at mystery websites as I was deciding. Well, even before I even had an agent, I thought, well, I got to get a website, which was actually turned out to be a good idea. But I looked, I saw a lot of my favorite authors, and I looked at a lot of mystery authors, and I kept seeing, I really like this website, And I scroll down the bottom, and it was always Zuni. And anyway, I got hooked up with Maddie, and I'm really happy. I think she's the best. Anyway, I do tour. I want to do more all the time, but I do have a day job. But I definitely try to get a little further east with each book. Unfortunately, this year I didn't. I went to Houston and Murder by the Book, which is great. That was the farthest east I went. I wanted to go further east, but it just didn't work out. And I wanted to go further north. But, yeah, I do try to add on a little each year, and definitely that's the plan for the next book, too. But I tour. I hit a lot in California, Arizona, Houston, and I think I'm going to either go to Chicago and Minneapolis with the book four that comes out at the end of this year, or either go to New York and maybe Philadelphia, or maybe Florida. Anyway, and then of course I go to our mystery conferences too, so that they're all over the. You never know where those are going to be. They're all over the place. I'll be going to Hawaii next month, or just a couple weeks, and then. Actually, BoucherCon, the biggest mystery conference, is in Toronto this year, which I've never been to. So there's that, too.
Oh, that'll be great. And what about Book Expo? It's going to be back in New York this year. It was in Chicago last year. Have you ever been to that?
No, you know, I haven't done Book Expo. I would like to. I did do the American Library Association one year in San Francisco, which is really good. And my publisher got behind me and another author, David Putnam, and we gave away some free books. I think that was really beneficial. But I've not done Book Expo. I would like to, but you know, I do have to pick and choose with limited days I can get away from my day job, and of course there's expense too. But I am working on it.
Okay, so well, let me get back then to, and I hope I'll run into you at one of these things. I've never been to a BoucherCon, but I want to. But I've gone to Book Expo a lot and love that. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty of who Rick Cahill is, since he's the main, since he's the guy. So the books are start with Yesterday's Echo, Night Tremors, and Dark Fissures. And Rick Cahill is a former cop living in Loyola. His career, everything was derailed when he was accused of killing his wife. So he emotionally ravaged, but hungry for justice, and working as a PI, chasing after cheaters and adulterers, but longing for something with a little substance, a case that matters. And then the first book is the one where he gets a prisoner in San Quentin, right?
That's the second book. That's Night Tremors. Yeah.
Night Tremors. Okay. The first book. Then is where do we
Echo, yeah. Yesterday's Echo, yeah. It's the first book, and that's the one that took me 10 years to get published. And as I was writing it, revising and sending it out, I didn't want to be that author that just never gets past the first book, keeps rewriting and rewriting and writing, and that's what I did. And I was talking to a woman, Carolyn Wheat, who runs my writer's group, and also I took some writing classes from when I was a neophyte. That's why I met her. She said, well, you know, whatever happens, you have to write this book because you're laying the foundation for your character, and whether it gets published or not. And I think that was great advice by her, because it really did. The more I revise, I learn more about the character. And still, I learn more with each new book I write. But in the first one, Yesterday's Echo, Rick is, it's about, I think, 8 years removed from his wife's murder. He was a cop in Santa Barbara, and he was the main person of interest. He was actually arrested. This is all backstory. He was arrested and released, but never exonerated. So his wife's murder has never been solved, and he was kicked off the police force. And so this dark cloud kind of has fallen, and even the beginning of Yesterday's Echo, which is 8 years later, he's in La Jolla, California, working in a restaurant where he used to work as a kid. And so that dark cloud of suspicion follows him. He's very aware of the media and police departments. He doesn't get along with either, and he tries to avoid the spotlight of each. But, of course, in the first one, he meets a woman who is arrested for her ex-husband's murder, and Rick had actually already fallen for her, but he sees some of his life journey is to gain redemption, because if you read the first book, if you start with the first book, whether he killed his wife or not is sort of up for it's a question, so I'm not going to ruin it, but whether he did or not, he feels responsible for his wife's death, so there's a his life is a bit of a quest for redemption that he can kind of never fulfill, or never let himself fulfill or feel the fulfillment. So when he sees someone and that needs his help, and if he thinks it's a righteous situation, he tends to get involved no matter how bad the choices he makes in doing so. So that's the first book. That's kind of a very long elevator pitch to what leads up to his journey there.
I was reading a short review in Coronado Arts, and it says this is talking about Dark Fissures. It says local author Matt Coyle has written another meticulously plotted detective novel with fast and continuous action.
That was actually a blurb from Thomas Perry.
Oh, okay.
They quoted the blurb from Thomas Perry, which was a very nice blurb from a very great writer and a nice guy.
So then you start.
I'm sorry,
go ahead.
No, it's
all about you, baby.
Dark Fissures is pretty. It does have a pretty rapid pace, so it never really feels that way when I'm writing them. But I think for Rick, there's always an internal struggle, which I think helps give a sense of momentum when he's dealing with his own demons as well as demons externally. So I think that. There's not a whole lot of dead bodies. There's always going to be some dead bodies, but there's not a tremendous amount of violence in my book. But there's always the inner turmoil, and I think that does give the sense of a fast read.
Okay, good. Well, now, so you said it, the first book, Yesterday's Echo, that took you 10 years, right?
Get published, yeah. And thank God it did,
yeah.
Because I think it got better with each revision. I think if I'd been unfortunate enough and lucky enough to get published at an earlier time, I don't think that the book would have been as good as it could be, and I don't think maybe my growth as a writer would be where it should be. Maybe.
All right. Well, before we go any further, I just want to say that, again, this is Madam Perry Salon. If you're listening live tonight, February 28th, you can call in and talk with Matt and ask him questions about writing, talk to him about something you've read of his, why you like it. And you can call. The number is 646-716-9922. And that is toll-free in the continental U.S., they tell me here at Blog Talk Radio, but 646-716-9922. So just call in. You can talk with Matt Coyle. And, so then with the publication of the first book. Now, this is what I like to know from authors, especially if they've got more than one book, and they've, you know, won awards and are popular. How did that first book feel, though? What was that? I can't imagine what kind of a rush that would be, that first book, when you've got it in your hot little hand and you're reading reviews and people are buying it. What's that?
That's fantastic. Before I pontificate, regarding if people call in, I'm going to give away a free. If you call in, you're probably going to get a free book. And if you already have it or you don't want to read it, you can use it as a doorstop. So there's value if you call in. It took me a long time to get published. Plus, I knew I wanted to be a writer since I was a kid. And as anybody who's read my website or listened to me talk, it goes back to when my father gave me The Simple Art of Murder by Raymond Chandler. I knew I wanted to write crime. I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And I realized after 30 years, you actually had to write to become a writer. So I wasted a lot of time getting there. And so, in spite of only, you know, taking 10 years only to get published, it was a lifetime ambition as well, or goal. So, it felt great. It felt great to get an agent. And then I had my first book signing, which I was really excited about. I was at, people heard this story, but maybe some haven't. I was at LA Times Festival of Books, and it was my very first signing opportunity. And the LA Times Festival of Books is, I think it's the biggest book festival in the country. It's great. It's always it used to be at UCLA. Now it's at USC, and there's tents for different genres. And so I'm in a mystery tent, and I'm with a guy next to me who's self-published, and a guy next to him who's with a smaller publisher than I have. And my only goal, I'm a published author now. I want to sell one book. I want to sign a book. Somebody come up, hey, I want to buy your book. So I'm sitting there, 15 minutes in, and nobody's bought a book. And the guy next to me, the self-published guy, has got an entourage. He sold like 6 or 7 books, and the other guy sold 3 or 4, and I got nothing. So I'm thinking, well, this is 10 years, and I got nothing. This is embarrassing. So I'm sitting there next to the sign that's got the listings of all the authors that will be in this particular tent for the weekend, and a couple walks up, older couple, and they look at the sign, and they see that T. Jefferson Parker, who's a hero of mine, who's going to be there the next day. And they go, oh, look, T. Jefferson Parker's going to be here. And I go, well, yeah. You know, I just bought his book down in La Jolla at Warwick's on Thursday, which was true. And I think it's great. And they go, La Jolla? They go, we live in La Jolla. I go, no way. I'm from San Diego, and my first book takes place in La Jolla. My book, only book I have done. So I hold up the cover of the book, and it's got a picture of La Jolla Cove on the cover. I go, yeah, you can see it takes place right there in La Jolla. He goes, you're kidding. I go, yeah, a lot of the action actually takes place in a restaurant I took fictitionally from Chuck's Steakhouse. They go, Chuck's Steakhouse? The gentleman who used to own that actually is a carpenter for us. He does some work around our house. I go, you're kidding. I actually have a character in the book taken from him because I work for him. They go, that's crazy. I go, no. And then they walked away. They didn't buy a book. So I thought, here I made it. I thought I'd made it. 10 years in the making. Nothing. Yeah.
I would think they would buy it just on the delight of that conversation alone and all the synchronicity involved. Well, again, the number to call is 646-716-9922 if you want to talk to Matt Corlin. You might win a book. And, hey, we've got somebody here right now coming into Madam Perry's Salon, and I think it's somebody we know. Come on in.
Hey, hey, hey. Guess who?
Hey.
Is this Reno Soriano?
Hey,
yes, it is.
Reno. Hey, we were just talking about you.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Matt, Reno Soriano. Yes, detox your life.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Hi, Matt.
Yeah.
How are you?
Hi. Good. Thanks for calling in. She had good things to say about you, so don't be worried.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to know what was your original inspiration for writing? Because I know mine comes from it's just a natural sense. It comes easily, but I know sometimes there's catalysts that spark you, that spark some people in the writing. So I was just curious, what was your main catalyst and of like pushing you into the writing arena?
Well, first of all, if it comes easily for you, then I'm going to take back the nice things that Jennifer said about you, because it doesn't come easily for me. It's a struggle, pretty much. But like I mentioned earlier, it really goes back to – well, actually, my great-aunt was Mary Chase, who wrote Harvey, the play Harvey about the six-foot invisible rabbit.
Really?
That was made into a movie with Jimmy Stewart, who was my favorite actor. So there's something in the blood, I guess, and my dad was an insurance agent for, I don't know, his whole life, mostly, that I knew him, and he always had the bug, too. He wanted to write, he never did, and as I said, I always enjoyed writing when I was a kid in school, and I said, I this is what I'm supposed to do, but I never did it, and so I think it was, for me, like a lot of my life, was a sense of guilt after so many years. I hadn't really done what my life's ambition was. I hadn't really, I let it years pass by without trying. Maybe I was afraid to fail. Probably that's a problem with a lot of people. But then when I was working, put out of business the fourth golf company I worked for in 10 years, I had some time off when I had a little money saved. And I said, well, you're either going to write a book or you're not going to talk about it anymore. So for me, it was probably fear and guilt, which is really what I work off of. That got me to write. But after I for the first 5 months, when I was unemployed, I would write at my old IBM ThinkPad, a used ThinkPad with the floppy disk, every day at my kitchen table, and it was probably the five best months of my life. So I knew this is what I should do. I still have to have a day job, maybe someday I won't, but once I really put the time in it and realized the sacrifice that was needed, I realized, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. Whether good or bad, this is what I should be doing.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
What
do you want a book?
Do
you want a book? Do you want a book or not? But anyway, we'll figure that out at the end.
Hey, yeah, Reno, do you want a book?
Sure. I mean, why not? I mean, I'm interested in other people's unique gifts and talents. So you write particularly, you said, on like the suspense thriller novels, correct? Is that your main genre?
Yeah, it's my only genre. I call it crime. My publisher calls it mystery. My agent calls it literary mystery. I just call it crime, but yeah.
Yeah, because I think those type of books really pull people, just because, like, even for me, like, nighttime, the way I chill is actually I watch, like, thriller dramas on Amazon through video. But even in books, when you read a book like that, there's something, it kind of takes you on, like, a journey or in a ride, and it's, like, the mystery of it, of, like, what's going to happen next. So I think that's what pulls in a lot of people. It's, like, it's almost, like, even though people know it's fiction, it's, on some level, it's not. It kind of... you learn about the characters, and then you kind of get, it's almost like you're going through the story and you're trying to find the solution or whatever's going on in the plot. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. You mentioned character too. And for me, it's always characters. It always starts with character because, to me, that's the most interesting part. As I mentioned earlier, the internal struggle that my character has, but you know, with a crime of murder, it is a way to show character for everybody involved, because it has repercussions, obviously, for all involved with the victim, including the murderer. So it is kind of an interesting way to look at character, and hopefully fun and exciting and not too bloody.
Very interesting.
Since you're carrying so you have three books with the Rick Cahill books. He's the main character. We're following him. And how do you come up with plots that keep things fresh? Because I know that when, like my husband and I, we get these murder mysteries, we'll watch the BBC things like Death in Paradise or Midsummer Murders, Respect to Lewis. And, you know, you watch them, we get involved with the character. But there are some times when, like Death in Paradise, it gets to where the same plot is being repeated just with different characters, you know. So how do you keep these kind of things fresh?
Yeah, that's actually, for me, hard not to do, because things do kind of fall into a routine. You're putting your character in a perilous situation, and my guy is single, and so there's potentially a love interest, although there isn't in every book. I do try to avoid that, but... I taken the second book came from a true crime situation that I'd seen on 48 Hours and Dateline, about a kid who'd been in prison by the time they started the show, probably for 10 or so years, for murdering his family. And for me, that was the catalyst for, I can use that character, but obviously a lot of what ifs and my own twists. So I got that idea from true crime. Even my third book, there's Dark Fishers, there's some Navy SEALs or ex-Navy SEALs in it, and I was reading about some SEALs who had lost their lives overseas, or actually they were ex-SEALs, they were working security, and I thought, well, what happens when these guys come home to the United States after being in war, you know, what do they do? And I thought, well, it makes sense for at least some of them to go into law enforcement. And then I had a character who is found by his son having supposedly committed suicide. And his estranged wife doesn't believe it's true, and even though it's been ruled that way. And so my guy, Rick Cahill, gets involved. For one, he actually needs the money at this point. Plus, he generally thinks that the crime is – or not the crime. He thinks the guy probably did commit suicide, but there's enough of a sliver of doubt for him to take a look at it. So that sort of – that idea sort of came from true life, but so there's always maybe a little sprinkling of something I've read somewhere, but the rest is, what's it going to do to my character? How's he going to deal with the situations? There's generally a subplot of internal stuff for him, but in the book I just turned in, my fourth book, which will be out at the end of the year, there's actually dual plot lines where there's something very personal to him dealing with his late father, as well as trying to help an ex-girlfriend in a situation she has. So there's a lot of internal stuff we need to deal with in the next book.
Okay, so fourth one already going. Well, now here's another thing I'm going to ask: dialogue, because even as far as I'm not all the way through with Dark Visions, but even getting through, you know, with dialogue, I wonder how when you create things in different people's voices, the woman, she's a singer, and, her voice speaking from her point of view on things. I mean, I do things as a publicist and a PR person. I do ghost tweeting for people that want that need to use Twitter but don't know how. And so each time I do, I know that I have a ghost tweeter that no matter what I want to say, I have to make sure that it's in the voice of the person for whom I'm tweeting at that moment. You know, so they might use a word that I wouldn't use, but I know that's their voice. And that's what they would respond to. That's what they would say. And so how difficult is it to get into the minds of different people or speak from their point of view, especially different sexes and ages and types, personalities? And also, I'm going to make this, a double or a triple. With dialogue, now I remember reading that the playwright David Mamet says that he just copies down conversations he overhears in restaurants or a cafe or coffee shop, whatever, stores. And a few other people do that. And sometimes I'll do that just for the – actually, Greg Dybeck, who I mentioned, that's the managing editor of Elite Daily, when he was here with his book, Art of Living Other People's Lives, he even had just – these were stories of people, but he even had one chapter at the back where he just wrote down comments that he just overheard in the subway or something, just one or two lines. So where do you ever eavesdrop to get lines, or where do you get?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm a huge David Mamet fan, but I just recorded every fight I had with my ex-wife, and I just used that. I still have hours. Anyway, now she's the mother of my – she and I share a dog, and actually she's one of my best friends. But, no, addressing the first part, it is difficult to get into particularly a women's head and to write dialogue for women, because I think I try to be conscious of the language, and I for some stupid reason, I think I use less maybe slang and more precise language with women, and just because it gives me some differentiation. But dialogue is tough. It's fun when you get it going and you find those characters, because you can find characters to dialogue, I think. But I don't know who, but I read somewhere years ago that dialogue is supposed to do two things. It's conveying what's going on, but there's also some hidden meaning. And so that is hard to always have, but it's fun when you're able to do it. But I do listen to people, obviously, but I don't absorb as much as I probably should. But also for me in all my writing, cadence is very important, and cadence and dialogue for sure. But just the rhythm of the language and the sounds and the sentence structure. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's all I have.
That's all I have, Senator. Well, okay. So that always gets me and impresses me when you can write from different people's points of view like that, because that is not always easy for some people. I mean, I've even seen a movie recently. I don't go to a lot of movies, but a friend took me to one, and it was supposed to be about some women or friends, and I thought, my friends and I would never say things like this to each other. I mean, we just don't talk this way in conversation.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, who wrote this, and what kind of people
exactly
are saying things? It didn't sound normal at all.
You don't want to get too writery. You certainly don't want to have "look at me, I'm a writer" when you're doing anything, but certainly doing dialogue. So it does have to sound – that's interesting, because it does have to sound real, but it can't be too real in that – I mean, the choices you make on what to actually say, you can't – because normally you see something, "hey, how's it going? Hey, pretty good." But you just get rid of that stuff, because you have to get to the meat of the matter as best you can. So choices of what they're saying as well as how they say it is important.
I'm sure at some point someone's talked to you about Rick Cahill and film or television.
Not yet.
Really?
Okay. No, but I'm available. I'm available.
Yeah.
No, but if there's a further question on that, I'll certainly answer it. I interrupted you.
Well, yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. I mean, if it's you know, if you're coming up with, you got the fourth book ready, and that's a Rick Cahill novel as well. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're following through this, and so Rick's going to have his own fans. That's why I wonder, could you see, has anybody, that's why I thought it would be natural somebody would approach you, especially as popular in the way you write. That
I think so, too.
Yeah. It's not bad, Matt.
Thank you. I meant about the approaching me part.
About the what?
I meant about Hollywood approaching me. That's the part I think that should happen. I agree.
Yeah. So, that somebody would approach you for, you know, film or even a TV series. And so if there were one, who would you see playing the part of Rick? And tell me why.
That's a good question. I have had that question before, and I do have an answer for it. But the prequel to it is that when I write Rick, I don't really know what he looks like. I don't have I have a physical idea, to maybe hair color and such, but size. But I don't see his face. I never see his face. Maybe that's because I write in first person and it's going outward as opposed to going inward. I sort of know what the other characters look like. I see their faces, but I don't see Rick's faces. However, I've never had a problem when I thought about, because who doesn't think about Hollywood? Never had a problem seeing someone to play him. And the first person that came to mind for me was Mark Wahlberg, although he might be a little short, but aren't we all? Because I think I'm a fan of his. I think he's actually underrated when he does straight stuff, non-comedic stuff. To me, there's always like this really dark mystery about him underneath. I always get that feeling when I'm watching him, you know, when he's doing his action or mystery stuff. So, and I think he'd be really good in the part. And for more modern, but perhaps more modern, I mean, Wahlberg's a lot younger than I am, but possibly Chris Pine, but he's probably too good looking. But you know, but I'll have no choice if it ever does come about anyway. So who cares? But no, I'm a fan of Mark Wahlberg's because I think he's a good. I think he's an underrated actor, and he just brings that kind of seething darkness underneath that appeals to me, and I think within Rick.
Well, let me see. I've got a question here from one of our listeners, David Hurley, and he's a poet and author. He's a publisher of Subtlety Magazine. And he messaged in a question to me for you, and he says, "I love it when crime thriller writers have pet protagonists over a series of books. Walter Mosley's Easy Rollins and Fearless Jones, Lee Child's Jack Reacher, Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe's and Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer, to name a few. But where did Rick Cahill come from in your creative mind? I mean." You said you like David Mamet. Do you like Spillane? I think he's underrated.
You know, I read Spillane, I think some Spillane when I was younger. I haven't read him in years, but yeah, I certainly liked him and Mike Hammer. Regarding the question, I semi-ducked it earlier, but like I said, there's a lot of autobiographical in Rick to begin with, but probably a sense of dread. But learning more about him was encapsulated for me when I was probably in the first book, I was maybe, 20 or 30,000 words in, and I was going back revising the beginning probably because I was stuck somewhere. And I ended up coming up with the first line of the first book, Yesterday's Echo. The first time I saw her, she made me remember and she made me forget. And when I wrote that line, I don't even know where it came from. I think it just came out of the ether or what have you. My subconscious, obviously, which is a better writer than I am. That opened up the character quite a bit for me because I realized, I think it made the book much darker than I was writing at that point. And I think that goes back to being less autobiographical and some of the great advice I got from Alan Russell, who's an author here in San Diego, a mystery writer who I met at my very first mystery conference. He was one of the Ream Critique guys. And he's,
well, what's his name
he
again?
Said, Alan Russell.
Alan Russell.
He writes for Thomas Mercer and he's doing really well. And he's a great guy. And he's helped me here and there over the years. they said, you know, you can write, but it's too autobiographical. I mentioned it earlier. So, because I think I was, for me, the character was a little looser, a little lighter, and there was more humor in the earlier drafts that I wrote. And then when I came up with the first line, I thought, well, what is it about this guy that he needs to forget so badly? And what joy was there in his life before that's now gone? And that gave me a much darker sense of him. And to me, I found my voice, I think. And I knew that I had to change the trajectory of where I was going a little bit. And my books were going to be much darker than fun. There's a little bit of humor here and there, but they're definitely on the darker side. So, like I said, I wish I could, you know, had a great story about how I molded this guy. But when that line came out of deep in my dark subconscious, I knew I had a character I could write for a while.
All right. So thank you, David Hurley.
Yeah, thanks.
With that
book
answer. Yeah. Actually, he said he did want one, so if possible.
Absolutely.
He's one of our favorite listeners and good friend. So, David said thanks for the book. So,
thanks for the question. It's a good one.
If you went outside of Rick Cahill and started a different series or a different genre, have you thought about what that would be, or have you considered anything else?
I don't think I go out of genre just because that's where I'm. I mean, it's always good to push yourself, but that's where I'm comfortable. That's where the stories interest me. Like I said, for me, it always starts with character. I have thought, I think at some point I'll probably write a standalone or start a new series. I intend to write Rick as long as people find him interesting, and as long as he's damaged and interesting to me, I think he's actually making improvements as a human being, but he's still got a long way to go. I had an idea for a standalone in my head, but it's really it's so dark, I don't even know if I want people to see that part of me.
Really?
My agent probably wouldn't like it. You gotta find the darkness. And I don't know. But I do think at some point I definitely will write something else as I continue to write Rick, probably when I get to the point where I don't have a day job anymore and I have more time to write. It would be to push myself would definitely, if I wrote something in third person, that would be a different challenge for me because I do write in first person. Although I think years ago when I used to write and, you know, when I would be inspired for a half hour, I never wrote in first person, but once I found this Rick Cahill character, it was first person for me. So to write in third person would be a challenge, and that would be interesting and probably painful.
Now, of course, you know, I'm going to say the obvious that since we don't know about if Rick really killed his wife or not, and you're leaving that, which I think is a great idea to leave that a bit of a mystery, don't give us away. Is this going to be like The Fugitive where this sort of haunts him forever, or is he always like under the shadow? He's not running from the law, but he's got that shadow over him.
Well, he does, and that's also something that is a bit of a delicate balance too, because he does have the shadow of his as book four I just turned in, as I mentioned. Right. I think that is probably maybe 11 years after his wife has been killed, and he's still the main suspect, but you know, it's pretty much a cold case. So yes, that always is in the background. It taints his relationship with the local police department, which I fictionalized in for La Jolla as a police department, which La Jolla does not have. It's a smaller town, but I wanted to have something insular. I wanted to have something very a smaller police department where there wasn't a whole lot of oversight, where the people in charge could pretty much do what they wanted to and get away with it. So that worked well with Rick's bumping up against them. But of course he doesn't move because that would be quitting, and he doesn't like to quit. So he deals with his horrible situation. But I think that there is that, I kind of got a little lost, but Yeah, I am cognizant of, is this guy ever going to get a break, or is he too dour? Although he does, you know, he's there's a little humor in it, but is he ever going to get, is he ever going to find joy in his life? And I think he's moving that direction. So the internal darkness is something I have to be aware of, because I my worry is that could wear on people, but so far I think it's okay.
Yeah, I guess what I'm thinking too is it would certainly affect or keep him from really having a comfortable relationship either with a woman or with friends. There's a trust issue.
I don't think comfort is in his vocabulary, actually. At some point, I think the situation of his wife's murder, whether he did it or not, will be solved. But I'm not sure when, because I just dealt with his father's situation. His father is his situation, as I mentioned, fictional La Jolla Police Department. He had been kicked off the force, which Rick repeated years later in Santa Barbara. But his father, when he was a kid, a man he looked up to, a man who could do no wrong in his eyes, and even in the small town of La Jolla's eyes, is suspected of being a bagman for the mob. He's kicked off the force without a pension. He ends up, this is all backstory, he ends up, being broken as a man, and he dies an alcoholic. And that's had a huge influence on Rick's life. And so in book four, Rick actually learns the truth about what happened to his father. And actually, I just lost my father a few months before I was writing this book, so it was kind of an emotional journey for me as well, and it's an emotional journey for Rick. So I don't think I'm going to have the another really emotional, of course it's always emotional for him, but a really deep story like that dealing with his wife's situation. But I knew I do have to deal with his wife's death at some point.
All right. So, and I'm so sorry to hear about your father. And what a time for it to coincide with writing this book. I promised you I would only keep you 45 minutes, and I've gone a few minutes over that. But it is such a pleasure. Okay. And by the way, I got to give a shout out to my girl Kenya Colbert, who's listening. She's stuck in Atlanta traffic, and she messages that she's listening in her car on the way home in traffic.
Oh.
And if you know anything about Atlanta traffic, it's supposed to be very similar to L.A. traffic. So it can take you an hour to get a couple of miles. So Kenya,
I feel sorry for her because I know all about L.A. traffic. Kenya will get a book. Get her a book. If I'm Oprah, everybody gets a book.
Yay!
So we'll give Kenya a book. If you'll just at some point send me all the info, I will send books out.
I would be delighted to, and that's very generous. It really is. Somebody else just sent me a message about, let's see, to you. Terrell Bird, and he's saying that he can't find the audio on the show right now. Terrell, if you're listening, well, of course you're not, because you can't get the audio. Somebody else that knew about this. Oh, maybe it was you. Do you know him? He said, Matt sent me an invitation.
Yeah, he's a friend on Facebook, yeah. He's a writer.
Oh, okay.
There'll be a podcast, I imagine, right? So I'll make sure he gets the link to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, they're in perpetuity on iTunes and Stitcher and Blog Talk Radio. You can download them at no charge. And let's see what else I've got here.
Hopefully he was watching it, because it's much better to watch. So if he watched it, he probably enjoyed it too.
Terrell, I just sent the link to you. I just messaged it to you. And you're funny. You're never going to do any comedy, though, are you?
You can
sip out some wry ones. You can kind of shake off some almost Dottie Parker-like things.
I wrote them all before we talked.
I don't believe that. but I'll go along with it, okay? So I'm so glad. So the fourth one, when can we expect that? Because I know as soon as I get through with Dark Fissures, I'm going to be going back and getting yesterday's Echo and Night Tremors.
I'm going to send you a book, too.
Pardon? Me?
I'm going to send you a book as well. Well, I'll send you a book. I'll send you the first one. It should be, I'm just about, as a matter of fact, tonight I'm going to send back the revisions to my editor. I think it's December again of this year.
Uh-huh.
So, although I intend to tour in November when the books are out, so available for if needed early, because I think it's better to tour in November than December. I learned that this year.
Yeah,
well, but now I have. I have news that I can't really say, but I will say this: I'd better start writing the fifth one very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I need to figure out what I'm going to write about.
Now, see, I think you're holding something back. Now, when you say it like that, there's like a little tease in there. There's a little tease, little come on, little mystery. And well, I can't tell you, but I better get this one done quick. See, I'm thinking that there is something with a TV show or a movie, and you're just not giving me the scoop.
I would be shouting that from the mountaintop. But no, it's just regarding perhaps other books. But and I'm waiting for the mail. But no, believe me, if I had some Hollywood action, it would be people would know about it.
Don't get me wrong,
because,
I have people say.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I have guests that want to schedule when it's time to announce that. They go, okay, well, can we put this day? Is this day I'm going to announce it fresh? And I go, yeah, that's great. That's fine. So I'm talking about you letting me have a scoop on this. I don't have
well,
to be
if
the
I have
first.
One, I give it to you.
Okay.
If I have one, I give it to you. Well, let me go back to my final thought on, not thought, but a wisdom I heard from, you know who John LaSquoi is? He's a New York Times bestselling mystery author. His name
is
spelled, yeah, sure, John LaSquoi. Everybody knows John LaSquoi. He's great. So his line is about Hollywood, and I won't use the word, but he says, you know how Hollywood says F you? They buy your
uh-huh.
book. So they buy your book. So if somebody in Hollywood wants to say F you to me, I'm perfectly okay with that.
And then, of course, they'll probably get it, and you won't even recognize it. Let's see, who wrote? Oh, I can't think now. Who wrote Get Shorty?
It wasn't Elmore Leonard. Wasn't Elmore Leonard?
Elmore Leonard, yeah, because I remember hearing him say something on the radio. Said when the movie came out, he says, I had no idea what was going on, and I wrote the book. I didn't know what was happening. And I wrote it. So,
all right, I'll give you a quick third hand story I heard about, and I'm pretty sure this is true, but I heard it from an author at a Sisters in Crime meeting years ago before I was published. A friend of his had written the novels for that Chuck Norris show about the Ranger guy, Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
So that thing probably ran, I don't know, 10, 12 years, probably at least 9 or 10. So, he wrote the books. They he sold the rights, but he got a job. He got a consultant deal, so he's on set every day. And he hates what they're doing, and they hate him. Trying to change things. So they said, "How much will it cost for you to go away?" And he said, "20 grand an episode." And this is back when they were doing 22 episodes a year. And they said, "Okay, done." And like I said, how many years did that show run? So. I'd take that too.
Yeah, now that's making lemonade. I'm telling you, or whiskey sours or whatever with lemons. That's it. That's the way to do it.
Yep.
You know. And
F you
no
money, as they say.
Yeah. I'll take that F you money. That's just fine. You know, I've had worse said to me, and not with cash. So I can dig it. This has been so much fun at COIL to have you here. Madam Perry Salon, I am just delighted that you took time to be here with us.
Ooh.
And
Honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Will you come back sometime, please?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. And thank you so much.
I'll come. I'll come back with a non-Hollywood story for you.
Oh, okay. All right. And in fact, I may I may invite you back when I've got a couple of other maybe author or musicians on, so that we can have a rousing chat. Although you have just been absolutely entertaining and just a joy. So please come back. I will make sure that everybody knows. If you follow Madame Perry Salon anywhere on Facebook or LinkedIn, you see I put you on LinkedIn too, made a big article on LinkedIn. I put you on Reddit. So if you follow me on Reddit, LinkedIn, Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram, then you've got some information on Matt Coyle, and I'm going to share it again tomorrow. Thank you so much for all the books that you gave away. Thanks to Reno for calling, for David Hurley, for Kenya for texting her love to us too, is it Terrell or Terrell Bird, your buddy?
I only know him through Facebook, so your guess is as good as mine.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, I think I called David Hurley every other pronunciation before he finally spelled it out phonetically for me. But he's a sweetheart, too. Much success, and where can people see you next? You got any live performances coming?
Yeah, I'll be doing stand-up in Vegas for 7 nights. I have no live I'm going to be in Left Coast Prime in Honolulu March 15th through, I think it's the 16th through the 19th. And you can always find me at mattcoylebooks.com. And I am on Facebook. I'm very active on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, and I know how to retweet, and that's about it. But I'm there, Coyle M, I think it's what it is, at Coyle M.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So
yes.
That's where you can find me, yeah.
Matt Coyle Books, MATTCOYLEPOOKS. You can't miss it. And this is Madam Perry signing off. Thank you. Vaccine.